quarter cup in the Committee on Revenue. So we have just, Elizabeth, we've just handled two big, big items. We've added Senator Starr, whose nameplate is here, and that means there is bread because he's the most generous and thoughtful senator we have, and so we're a morning committee, and we now have pumpkin bread. And
oh, excellent.
Wow.
Thanks to Senator Starr, and we just made, I think, one of our bigger decisions we're going to make this session to include coffee with that. So coffee might be on the way. We are on day two of our orientation meetings. Again, for those, we're going to start the first 2 weeks at 9 o'clock because we think we can get through this orientation period, and we'll have a few bills next week. But for the first 2 weeks, this committee will meet at 9 o'clock. And we'll go right into the personal income tax. And Elizabeth is here. We worked with you a lot last session, Elizabeth, and welcome. Welcome for us. You got to stay here.
Chairman Deckard and committee members, I'm Elizabeth Martin Mahar with the Legislative Revenue Office. I'm the personal income and corporate tax economist. So what I'm going to go through today, I have a lot of slides, but, you know, we have limited amount of time, so don't worry. If we don't get through it all, it's not the end of the world. I know you guys can read up on it yourself, or you can come and talk with me if we don't get through it all. So basically what you have in front of you, though, just so we're very clear, you've got these, you know, colored overheads from the presentation. You've also got a research report here that we just recently completed, and this is on the impact of the 1997 legislation, the earned income and the working family child care tax credits. And then I also just want to make sure that you guys have, and you know at least, that we do have these research publications. The Oregon Personal Income Tax Statistics is a very hefty book, lots of tables, but, you know, if you really, anything that we really look into and dissect of our tax returns is in here, and I can help you find things if you do want that, but it's very good at giving a distributional breakdown of different things from the, you know, Oregon medical deduction to, you know, mortgage interest and things. So feel free to use this, and we'll have another one again for corp when we start in with that. But today with personal income taxes, we're going to start with just the trends in the personal income tax system and then some of the details of the personal income tax system as far as going through kind of a, like a tax return. And then the surplus kicker, and then just some basic tips on legislative tax policy changes. So this is something that's right straight out of our Oregon Public Finance Basic Facts. It's page 8-8. And this just gives you a good historical look at our property tax versus our personal income tax here in blue versus our corporate down here in pink. And what you can see is prior to Measure 5, our property tax collections generated more money than our personal income tax for years. And then we see here, this begins to show then the effect of Measure 5 on the property tax system, where we saw then a reduction. Now, with the personal income tax, it really started taking off in the late 1990s. And that's where you see this real steep slopes here in the personal income tax system. And that's just due to our structural change that we saw with an increase in manufacturing. And then what we saw, obviously, is our big trouble that we had in the 2001-03 biennium, where we had here $4.5 billion in the 2001 fiscal year drop all the way down to $3.7 billion. It was a drop of $850 million, 19% in just 1 year. And so that's what Paul showed you the other day with having the biggest decline, you know, annually that we've seen in over 50 years. So basically what this shows you is the volatility in the personal income tax system. Now with the corp, it's kind of hard to see the volatility due to the scale of this particular graph, but you can see during the 80s, corp wasn't that volatile, but then in the 90s, it started taking off just like the personal income taxes did. And then we start seeing the volatility here in the corp system. And then again, here was this huge drop here in the 2001-03 biennium that really put us in a big deficit. This was a drop of 48% there in 1 year in the corporate revenues. And so that's what we're just now beginning to recover from. And you can see we haven't even gotten close to that height that we were at in the early 2001.
Elizabeth, can we say with assurance that individual will lag behind corporate? So as corporate rises, the individual returns should rise too? with it, just
yeah,
lag.
Yeah, Chairman Decker, that's correct. I mean, in the sense that we're first going to have to see some corporations hire people, and then we see our personal income taxes go up.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, there's going to be a lag here. I mean, but they're going to work in tandem. You know, eventually the trends are going to be real similar. So, yeah, and the same thing with bonuses. Once corporations start doing really well, then they'll pay bonuses, and then we see our personal income taxes go up. Now, with this just gives you the breakdown of the general fund revenues, and it kind of just shows you the 2001-03 biennium versus the 2003-05 biennium. In the 01-03 biennium, we were in the recession, so this kind of gives you the recession biennium period. And what you can see here is personal income taxes comprised 82% of the total general fund revenues. And that was lower than we've seen on average because we were in a recession. And what increased then were these other non-tax revenues. They comprised 10% of all of our general fund revenues. And what we have in here is the borrowing that we did of the tobacco money. So what we see then in the 03-05 biennium, where we're beginning to see the recovery, we see personal income taxes rising faster than all the other taxes. So you see their portion of the total general fund revenues grew to 87% versus 82%. And then what we see same thing was true with corporate. Corporate fell tremendously in the 01-03 biennium, so their portion of the total was only 4%. But by the time they started recovering, they were recovering out of the recession much faster than the other taxes, so their portion of the total general fund grew to 6%. And then these other non-tax revenues, we don't have the borrowing in there, so that dropped from 10% down to 4%. And then with other taxes, it really didn't change too much. What you have in other taxes are the estate taxes, you have the cigarette and tobacco taxes. And the estate taxes grew quite significantly between 01-03 and 03-05, but the cigarette taxes did not grow, and the tobacco taxes did not grow to the same extent that you saw personal income and corporate tax growth. Now, on the number of tax returns, and this is just trying to help and refresh everyone's memory, that basically we collect most all of the taxes in the personal income tax system during the year. So most people just don't realize how much we are collecting on our withholdings throughout the year. So basically this tries to illustrate that by just looking at the number of returns in 2002. The number of returns with withholdings was basically 1.2 million, and that represents about 74% of all of the tax returns, which were about 1.6 million in returns filed in 2002. And then an estimated payment, the people who make estimated payments are like small businesses. If you know you're going to have capital gains, then you'd be making some estimated payments in order to make sure you have that tax liability covered. So those estimated payments are really a pretty small number, though, only 9.3% of all the tax returns. And then what also illustrates here is the number of tax refunds is almost three times the number of tax returns that actually paid money with their returns in the April of 2003 for this particular tax year. So basically this is just showing you how effective withholdings are at bringing in the money initially throughout the year, and then taxpayers will get refunds of almost a million different returns had refunds. Now, when you look at the amount of that tax, then basically the total amount due in 2002 was $3.5 billion. And what you see is that amount of tax that was withheld throughout the year was 67% of the total. And then estimated payments were roughly 14% of that total tax that was due. So you can see that withholdings is really the way in which we're bringing in the majority, or you know, over almost 70% of our tax each year. And then the amount of tax refunds was roughly 13% of that total, and taxes that was actually paid with returns was only about 6%. Now, to just kind of elaborate a little bit more on some of these withholding payments, the Department of Revenue Research Section has done a great job of taking these withholding payments and our corp estimated payments and categorizing them by different industry sectors. So these are called the North American Industry Sector, it's called the NICS, And this is something that we have an our employment data under these categories, as well as now our tax withholding. But the great thing about this is it gives us a, you know, as taxes are coming in, we can get a sense of what's happening in the economy faster than we can looking at our tax returns, which take a while and are delayed. So with the withholdings, the count here means basically the number of employers. And this just kind of gives you a snapshot of our economy by different industries as far as our personal income taxes. And basically what it does is take employers and it puts them in different categories, but recognize this is not employees. This is just, you know, number of businesses, basically. Like the state of Oregon, even though it's huge with thousands of employees, it's only in here under a count of one, you know, under public administration. So just so you realize, this count is just really trying to give, you know, us an understanding of how many different industries there are in these different categories. But this shows you then the amount of withholding. So basically what we see is manufacturing may not have a whole lot of businesses. You know, the largest one here is construction, and then you've got quite a bit here in retail trade. But manufacturing may have a smaller number of businesses, but look at these withholdings. I mean, significantly more. So it's a large portion of all our withholdings in a given 12-month period. And that's really the important thing, is just recognizing the importance of these different industries on the total makeup of our personal income tax system. So what this withholding tells you is it's basically looking at the number of employees that a company has, timesing it by how much their wages are throughout the year. So as, say, the manufacturing industries and stuff lay people off, then those tax withholdings go down. But as they hire new people, then you've got the tax withholdings going up.
Mr. Chair.
Yes.
Before we leave the slide, the finance and insurance, I'm assuming that would include like banking?
Correct.
And then what would be the one that's underneath real estate? Professional?
That's correct, Senator Prozanski. It's professional and scientific services.
Okay.
So you've got your engineering firms in there, your auditors, your CPAs and stuff.
Thank you.
So now this is taking, this is something that the Department of Revenue calculates for us, and it is just a great way of looking at the trends in the different industries. And again, I know this is kind of hard to look at the very first time, but, you know, what you're looking at is an index here that has a basis of January of 1999. And what this is looking at a 12-month, though, period of withholding. So you are looking at a full year of withholdings, but it's for each month beginning, say, like July of 99, then that shows you all of the tax withholdings for the prior 12 months, prior to like July of 99. So what we see here, the black line here, this is all different industries. And so, you know, this kind of gets mitigated by the industries that are doing well and then those that are falling and declining significantly. So what we see here is with the recession, say, in January of 2001, with this red line here is really showing manufacturing. This was the first sector to really show declines then with our recession lately. So we see from that red line how significantly manufacturing dropped. And it kept falling and falling until about June of 2003. And then now it started to turn around. But you can see, I mean, just from the magnitude-wise, from our height in January of 2001, we already at all close to where we were in January of 2001. I mean, we've come and surpassed at least from where we were, you know, at some of these points like January of 2002. So we have made some comeback, but just recognizing that, like, this sector has not at all recovered to the point that we were in January 2001. Now, the industries that look pretty recession-proof here is, like, this yellow line here, and that's healthcare. That has gone and continues to rise all throughout the recession period. And the same thing with the finance and insurance. That low interest rate had really kept up the finance and insurance withholdings. So we've seen a few little dips, you know, here and there, but nothing at all like some of these other sectors. Same thing with wholesale. That's this green line here with the squares. And then retail took a dip. So now this is basically a table showing you the different industries that had a decline in withholdings between July of 2001 and October of 2002. This was a slide that we had beginning of last session, and it just really tried to help illustrate for everyone what were the sectors that really were experiencing real drops in withholding tax. And this shows you that manufacturing was one of the biggest, even during this time period. Wholesale trade was another one. Construction had a big drop of 12%. And information services, which were like publishing companies, newspapers, that all had a pretty significant drop of 16%. Arts and entertainment and recreation, I mean, after 9/11 and things, we saw a real people just weren't going out a lot, and they didn't have extra money and stuff to spend on entertainment and museums and whatnot. So we see these are the areas that really were declining at the beginning of last session. Now we see these same sectors at the beginning of this session. And now what you see is that manufacturing has recovered from those lower points that it was at during the lowest month of 2001 recession. So manufacturing has increased, but, you know, really only 5%. It hasn't been significantly from those lower points in 2001. Wholesale trade also has been up much better, 16% growth. Construction grew by 12%. Now, what you see are these two industries, information and then arts and entertainment, still have negatives, which just means they haven't recovered up to that point of even their low point in the 2001 recession. And that's what you can see from those overall graphs. This just kind of dissects that in a little more detail and stuff. So basically, this just tries to, you know, give you a little bit of a sense of how the economy is doing through our tax withholdings. Now to kind of look at some of the details of the personal income tax system. Basically, with the personal income tax, we start with a reference point, and we bring this forward to our Oregon tax return, the federally adjusted gross income. Now, since 1997, Oregon has been permanently tied to that federal definition of taxable income. And what we did last session through House Bill 2186 is that we temporarily disconnected from that rolling reconnect to federal tax law changes. And this is just for those tax law changes dealing with taxable income base. So basically what this is telling you is that we're connected to the federally adjusted gross income as of December 31st, 2002. So that's why when you were talking about yesterday different things we were going to be doing in Senate revenue, well, one of the big things you'll be doing is looking at the federal law changes. And this is why, is because not everything is having a rolling reconnect like we had in the past. So that allows you then the discretion to go in and decide what you want to connect to and what you don't want to connect to.
Do we have a choice? I mean, we must assertively reconnect because of how we crafted 2186 this session.
Chairman Deckard, that's correct. And that's important for everyone to realize that, you know, we have a disconnect right now. We've got all law changes that occur after December 31st, 2002, we're not connected to. So if they occurred in 2003, which we've seen quite a bit of legislation in 04 and 03, we need to be sensitive to whether we're connecting with all those provisions or not, because we will start a rolling reconnect, but that's only prospective for those future federal law changes that occur after December 31st of 2005. So there would be a gap here. If we did nothing for the next three, you know, did nothing this session, and then in December 31st, 2005, if there was some legislation in 2006 that passed the Congress, then we would have a rolling reconnect. Sure. But if they passed it December, you know, 30th of 2005, we would not be connected with it. Mm-hmm. Okay? So we have to proactively take each legislation and make sure that we're connecting to a specific date. Now, if we connect to, if you write the legislation such that you're connecting to all federal law changes, you know, until December 31st, 2005, until the very end, you make that connection, then you don't have to worry. But right now, we are disconnected. So if you don't have any legislation this session, you will have some outstanding, congressional changes that we haven't connected to. Mm-hmm. So anyway, so just so everyone realizes, this is how we're bringing forward the federal tax law is through the federally adjusted gross income, but we're connected to federal taxable income. Now, some states are connected just to this federally adjusted gross income. Then their own, they can set their own itemized deductions. But that's not what Oregon does. We also accept federal itemized deductions.
Mr. Chair.
Yes, Senator. I just want to follow up on that point. If we have, I guess, two ways of doing it. One would be emergency clause, which is not really necessary so long as we do it retroactively, that we connect back to the beginning of 05. Anything that happens now, we would be covered.
Senator Perzanski, that's correct, yeah. I mean, we can set it proactively back for all. I mean, we're just going to set it a new date, you know, as far as connection date.
Thank you.
Okay, so what we have after our federally adjusted gross income, and so everyone's clear, too, we do have some adjustments at the federal level that are brought forward. Okay, so most of the time you think of federally adjusted gross income as total income because those adjustments are not real big. I mean, they're only about 1% of all of our, last year, or in 2002, basically our federally adjusted gross income was $66.6 billion. Well, the adjustments were, you know, not even a billion. So, you know, it's a pretty small portion of the total. But just so long, we oftentimes just refer to federally adjusted gross income as a base and think of that in terms of just total gross wages. I mean, the adjustments are things like moving expenses, alimony paid, student loan interest. I mean, it's kind of pertaining to just particular people. But then what we do is from the federally adjusted gross income, you add in then Oregon additions. Now, this is income that the federal government does not tax, but Oregon does. So that's why we're adding it back. And so this is, you know, this is kind of the area in which you, if you do want to make changes and disconnects from federal law, this is what you do. And then you add them in to, they become an Oregon addition. So we'll go through some of these additions and subtractions and stuff in more detail. But then you have Oregon subtractions. And so our biggest subtraction here is the federal income tax that is paid, and that is limited currently at $4,000. It's to go up to $5,500. But this is basically all your subtractions are income that the federal government does tax, but Oregon does not. And Social Security is another one. So then what we do is we look at basically from the additions, subtractions, and we also minus off deductions. And then we look again at standardized deductions versus itemized deductions. And again, these are the federal itemized deductions. And the standard deduction in Oregon is indexed for inflation. It's currently in 2004, $1,720 for single, $3,445 for joint. And then what you end up with after all those adjustments then is Oregon taxable income. So there is quite a difference between Oregon taxable income versus federally adjusted gross income. Now, to just kind of look at some of the largest Oregon subtractions and some of the trends that we've been seeing in them, to begin with, obviously, the largest Oregon subtraction is the federal income tax deduction. And the importance of this is where we have the connection with federal law also. So when we look at changes made by the Congress, it not only impacts Oregon through if they change the definition of taxable income, like we had discussions last session about whether or not Congress would remove dividends from the base of taxable income. Well, if they had done that, then that obviously would lower Oregon taxable income. But also any changes they make on their rates. So they lowered the dividend rate and they lowered the capital gains rate. That then lowers federal tax liability. Well, then it comes through to our state taxes through lower federal income tax deduction. So that's where you see, and that's why you're seeing some of these trends also in the amount. I mean, we've been increasing this amount of federal income tax deduction. You would think this would be going up, right, or this particular deduction, but it's not. And the reason why is because Congress has been lowering the federal tax liability, so more people don't have to claim the maximum, and they're claiming less in federal taxes as a deduction. So that's the big trend there with federal income taxes. And then Social Security income, again, is a subtraction here in Oregon. So at the federal level, they are taxing a portion of Social Security income, but in Oregon, we eliminate the tax on that. And then what we see here is that is something that will be growing significantly in the next 10 years as far as one of our subtractions, just due to the elderly population here in Oregon. And then what you see here, Oregon tax refund, that's also a subtraction. So when we have the kicker checks, then that becomes something that's subtracted. The bond interest, so basically that's interest and dividends on U.S. bonds. We subtract that off. The federal pensions, now this got a lot of legislation and stuff during the 1990s. So what you see with this federal pension is it pretty much is only for the federal service before October 1st of 1991. So we should be seeing this kind of stabilize. It may grow some in the next few years, but then it will begin to decline because it is only for service that's in, you know, before 1991. So those retirees will begin to retire. The other here is like military active duty pay, scholarship awards for housing expenses, but they're pretty small. And then this is the Orion Special Medical Deduction, and as we all know from Measure 30, this got a lot of interest and things because we means tested it and stuff. So
are we the only state in the nation with that unique deduction that we have?
Chairman Deckard, that's correct, yes, for the elderly, yes. Yeah, I think it was North Dakota or something. I had a similar one, but it was for all residents, not just for the elderly. So now to just look at the top five Oregon subtractions, and basically this is for 2002. We see the federal income tax comprised basically about 41% of the total there of the $5.5 billion. And this total, these top fives total $5 billion, which is roughly 92% of this $5.5 billion of all the Oregon tax subtractions. So Social Security is again, a growing one, and that now comprises 21% of all of the Oregon subtractions. The federal pension income is roughly about 14%, and these two are quite a bit smaller, only 8% and 7.7%. So to just kind of look at some of the trends now that we see in itemized tax returns versus standardized tax returns, you can see in 1990 we had roughly about 1.17 million tax returns. Well, you can see in the pink here are the number of standard deduction returns, and the blue polka dotted here is the itemized deduction returns. So you can see in 1990 over 60% of the tax returns were standardized versus 2002 where you've got roughly about 1.4 million returns, and here you see it's roughly about 50%. Well, what's really the reason for the increase then in the itemized tax returns? And the main reason is the increase in home ownership. You basically have had the lower interest rates that has allowed additional people to own homes. And then once you own a home, you can not only have the mortgage interest deduction, but you get the property tax deduction. So those are two really big deductions that really help and encourage people then to want to itemize their tax returns. So to look at some of the trends now in the federal itemized deductions, and basically with this, you've got the mortgage interest, which is by far the biggest. And again, you can see this real big increase of almost $500 million in just 4 years there between 1990 and 2002. And that's because of the lower interest rates and more people are able to get into homes. And we also saw an increase here in property tax deduction. Other charitable contributions are like religious and certain nonprofit organizations. That is a common federal itemized deduction. And then the medical expenses, where here in Oregon we allow the medical and dental expenses for up to 7.5% of your adjusted gross income, where at the federal level then you get the medical and dental expenses that are above 7.5% of your adjusted gross income. So these are for the larger medical expenses. And so this is something that is also growing due to our aging population. And miscellaneous are things like legal expenses, CPA expenses, other expenses for like dealing with your rental property and things like that. This one's educational, charitable contributions, and investment income for that income that's that's over your net investment. So those two are pretty small. So what you see here with the top five federal itemized deductions is that in 2002, the home mortgage interest here was $4.66 billion versus the total of $12.1 billion, and that was 38% of the total. And then property taxes were $1.3 billion, and that was about 11%. And then charitable contributions were about 8%. Medical deductions about 7%. So the total here of all of these itemized deductions were about $8.1 billion versus the $12.1 billion of the total. So it was roughly about 67% of the total were these top five federal itemized deductions. But it also should tell you that there's quite a few itemized deductions, and we've got a lot out there. And so the top five really don't comprise as much of it as some other things like our top credits and stuff.
Which are our top credits for folks that are really interested in the expenditure report? You might be getting to them.
Yeah, I am, but that's okay. It's a personal exemption credit by far. Yeah. Okay, so then with what we do on our tax statement, again, is once you get to Oregon taxable income, then you're going to times it by the tax rate. And in Oregon, we just have the three-tiered rate system of 5, 7, and 9. And then you're going to get a tax before credit. And so basically this, for a lot of people, they just look at the tax tables and determine their tax before credits. But just recognize that those tables all are based on a 5, 7, and 9 rate structure. And then the tax credits, basically, like I was just saying, $151 is now that personal exemption credit, and then you times your number of exemptions, and that's by far the largest. And that is indexed to inflation each year. So 2004 is what the $151 is. So then that equals then, once you remove your taxes from your liability, then that equals your net tax. And just so everyone's clear, too, you know, our tax rates of the 5, 7, and 9 are significantly lower than the federal tax structure, which has like six different tax brackets that go from 10% to 35%. And their 0% bracket is practically, there's zero tax if your joint income is less than $14,000. So, you know, their zero bracket is quite large compared to our 5, 7, and 9. It's practically in that same range of income. Now, so our 2004 personal income tax rates, they are also, these brackets are indexed to inflation. So every year they will change according to the change in the CPI. Now, joint returns are twice the amount of singles. So basically what you think of is a household with joint, you've got two people at least. So that's why the brackets are twice as big or twice as wide. And so basically with singles, the income below 2,600 is what is taxed at 5%. Then the income between 2,600 and 6,500 is taxed at 7%. So basically, if you have any income above 6,500, you will have a tiered tax rate of 5, 7, and 9 combined. So just everyone's clear. It's not like all your income is thrown into the 9% bracket if you have income above 6,500 for single and 13,000 for joint return. So it is a tiered, and that's why you'll see in these upcoming slides, our effective tax rate is not 9%. Okay, it's a little bit lower than that. Okay, so the trends in the largest Oregon credits, between 1999 and 2003, what we see here is that personal exemption credit is by far the grandfather of all the credits. You've got over $370 million here in credits there. And basically, in 2002, there was only only $452 million in credits. And so this is comprising a large portion of all of our credits. So the other ones that are large here is you see that taxes paid to other for the taxes that you paid in other states, this is a credit that is allowed if you have income that is taxed in two different states. It has to be the same income taxed. So say you're an Oregon resident and Oregon is going to tax you for your total income. But then you also say a portion of that time you spent in Idaho, you know, working on some project, and then Idaho taxed you. Well, then you would be allowed a credit for that income that you earned in Idaho, and you were also taxed here in Oregon. So that's basically where this credit is coming from.
Do you know offhand what the ballpark is for that figure?
As far as
aggregate, how much that credit, I don't know if cost is the right word, Oregon, but...
Chairman Deckard, it's right, you know, here you can see it was above $15 million. Oh. Yeah, for 99, 2001, it was almost, you know, probably 17.5. But then it dropped, you know, and it's been declining now in 2003. And 2003 could be kind of preliminary data, too. I'm not, you know, swearing by this data. So it may rise a little bit, but I would say about $15 million anyway it's been.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Fransky.
Do you know how many states actually provide for that type of credit where some of your income is raised or brought in from another state or while you're working in another state?
Yeah, Senator Przanski, I don't know how many other states provide that. I would imagine it's pretty common. Mm-hmm. And at the federal level, they also provide that federal tax credit if you pay taxes in other countries. So that is, you know, kind of along those same lines. So basically the same income is not taxed two different places.
Thank you.
Paul. Mr. Chair, Senator Przanski, I was during our scramble in the special sessions looking at all the credits, and we did look at those taxes paid to other states, and I went through all the states, and they all had that credit. Every one of the states with an income tax. So it is universal.
Great.
How do they capture? Excuse me. How do they capture income earned from out-of-state corporations or businesses?
Chairman Deckard and Senator Starr, I think it has to be self-reporting. I mean, I think you have to report it that you got taxed, say, in Idaho for that income that you earned, and then you would report it here.
I got paid for a job in Idaho, and I didn't report it in Idaho.
Right.
But I went ahead and paid the Oregon tax on that income. What my question is, how do we capture the income earned in state from out-of-state businesses?
Yeah. Senator Starr, I think it's pretty tough. I mean, I think, you know, you're asking for a company, say, brings in a person who is like from Texas or something and works here in Oregon. Well, we're just taxing our you know, residents that are here.
Okay.
Senator, we do have a day with the Department of Revenue going through their compliance procedures, and I think that is probably one of their toughest areas in terms of ensuring compliance.
You can also have an agent come out to your house and rifle through your books if you'd like that. It's always an option.
They did that and saved me $700. I invited them back.
Go more often.
Well, that is a good story.
Okay, well, the main thing I want to illustrate here, and it's part of the upcoming slides and stuff too, is that on the working family child care credit, this has changed, and we now make that refundable. And so that's why you see this big bar out here for 2003. Now that expense on that particular credit is over $20 million, where the earned income credit and the working family child care credit used to be quite similar as far as the amount of outlays, you know, roughly $11 million, $12 million a year. But now working family child care credit is significantly larger. Now, the political contribution tax credit, this is something that's been pretty stable. You basically, it's limited, $50 for singles, $100 for joint. It's, you know, so they're pretty low limits. And the number of people that really contribute to political contributions, it's not really growing significantly. So we don't see this to be a credit that'll change much from year to year.
Is that a common credit with income-based states like Oregon to have this political tax credit?
Chairman Dickert, to be honest, I don't really know how many other states have that. Do you follow? Yeah.
I don't know the answer to that, but I would be surprised if very many do.
Yeah.
And then this one right here is the child care tax credit. And this is for the amount of eligible expenses in child care that families have. You have it's means tested, so your joint income has to be less than $45,000 for that. And the retirement credit is also means tested, so it's just for that. It's like 9% of your pension income is a credit if you're low income or joint income is less than $45,000. Now, the top five Oregon credits. Now, basically, what we were just talking about, personal exemption is 82% of the total. Working family here in 2002 is only $14 million, but again, it went up to over $20 million in 2003 because it became refundable. And then the child care is down here at 6.5. So basically, these top five credits total like $421 million. Well, that's, you know, really, it's like 93% of the $452 million in 2002. So you can see our top five are really comprising most of our credits. And this just gives you the same breakdown, only in a pie graph. And it just kind of illustrates more clearly that these other credits, you know, do total, you know, 5.2%. But, you know, they're pretty small. I mean, we're talking about, you know, small business, the energy credit, the pollution control that some personal income tax payers can take, alternative energy devices, that farm machinery and equipment tax credit. So, you know, these other credits are not real big, though. I mean, only 5.2% of the total in 2002. Now, this is just a... I'm going to begin to talk about the Oregon Earned Income and Working Family Child Care Credits. And in order to highlight that, I brought in a picture of my little son here. This is Zachary. He's a big 8 months.
Yeah. We will not touch that tax credit.
But that's
$151.
But basically, that's what's in here, and that's what you've got more detail on this, and that's nice leisurely reading. But basically... The earned income credit and the working family child care credit were brought into effect in 1997, and that was in Senate Bill 388. And basically, with those two, prior to this time, there was just the child care tax credit, and that was the only one that was really targeting low income and moderate income families. So the earned income credit is 5% of the federal earned income credit, and it is non-refundable here in Oregon. Now, at the federal level, the EIC is refundable. There's basically about 16 states in 2003 that had this EIC in each state, and then there was roughly about out of the 16 states, 13 states actually had the credit refundable. So the majority of the states have clearly made the credit refundable. But basically what we're seeing is that the EIC participants are quite significantly a large number of participants compared to the working family child care credit. So we have, of the EIC, we have roughly 160,000 people claiming this credit each year. Now, one of the purposes of that of the legislation in 1997 with the EIC was really trying to help these low-income folks eliminate their Oregon tax liability. And so what we're seeing at the 5% level is that roughly about 60,000 of the 160,000 participants in this credit have an Oregon tax that equals to zero after they take their EIC credit. So you've still got about 100,000 or more returns that still pay some Oregon tax even after they have their EIC. Now, what we see is what we were just talking about, the EIC total amount that is actually claimed is roughly about $11.7 million in 2003. And then one major requirement of both the working family and the EIC is that both credits have to have, both families that claim this have to have some earned income, so they have to be working. Now, with the working family child care credit, this is a percent of the child care expenses. The minimum income for the working family child care is roughly $6,000. And then income cannot exceed 250% of the federal poverty level. So it's a sliding scale as far as the percent of your child care expenses, and it depends on your income in relationship to the federal poverty level. So if you have income above 250% of the federal poverty level, then you don't have any working family child care credit. The highest percentage is 40% if you have income that's below 200% of the federal poverty level. Now, the working family child care claims total more than $25,000 annually. And now, in 2003, the working family child care credit is the only refundable credit, and then now the amount of that tax amount that is actually claimed is up to $21 million. Now, basically, this is one of the tables from that research report, and I just want to highlight a couple things. And basically, with you can see here, I've already discussed the difference in the tax amount now of outlays. But if you look here at the average tax, and basically the average tax for the working family child care credit is $814 versus the average for the earned income credit is only $70 in 2003 now. So there's quite a big difference just because of the refundability of the working family child care credit. And when you look at the difference between the federal EIC in 2002, it was $1,609 for those Oregon residents versus the Oregon EIC, which was $68. And what you are seeing, though, and one thing that come out of the report is that there is an integration there between there are some taxpayers that are claiming both the working family child care credit as well as the EIC. So those participants are able to get some benefit from having a refundable working family child care credit. So what we see is that the average tax credit for those people who claim both credits was roughly $940 in 2003, which is a bit higher than this credit right here, average of $814. Now, this graph really kind of just illustrates, kind of gives you the big picture of our personal income tax structure with our credit. And basically what it shows is that credits are really tailored to help low-income taxpayers, and it really is adding progressivity to our tax structure. So basically, initially what you see for taxpayers with income between $0 and $10,000, their effective tax rate or effective credit rate is, right around 1.7% versus their effective tax rate is about 1.8%. So you can see that's why we have this steep slope here initially on the effective net tax rate, is because you're seeing the credits increasing until 10,000 to 20,000 income group. Then we're seeing our credit effective tax rate declining. And that's just because we're phasing out credits as your income grows. And then what you see here is that this is what adds a progressivity to our personal income tax system, is that as your income grows, you're going to be getting less in credits, and so then your effective tax rate will be growing until it's almost 8% for those with income above $500,000. Now, to just kind of look briefly at the distribution of tax returns, which what you see here is a growth. The green, the lime green here is 2002 tax returns, and the gray blue here is 1990 tax returns. And this is just a number of returns in these different income groups. And this has not been adjusted for inflation or anything like that. But just really to show you a bit of a snapshot, what we're seeing here, obviously these lime green bars, quite significantly higher on the 40,000 and above categories. So we're seeing more returns in the higher income groups. That's the trend over the last 12 years. And you see there's an increase, obviously, in the number of returns, too, from 1.3 million to 1.6 million is an increase of 23%. And then when you look at our components of adjusted gross income, and this is really just kind of trying to jog everybody's memory on what is all the different components in our adjusted gross income, what we see here in 1990, we had $35 billion in total adjusted gross income for the state. And here we saw that 66% of that was wages. But what we saw were quite a bit of dividends and interest. There was 8.7% of adjusted gross income was that. We also saw other at 7.2% of adjusted gross income, and that was like farm income, alimony, unemployment, and compensation tax refunds and things. Then we see business income, and these are sole proprietors. They were roughly 5.1% of the total adjusted gross income. But you can see capital gains was only 3% here in 1990, and pensions were 6.2%. And miscellaneous encompasses things like, that's the Schedule E, you'll hear Department of Revenue talk about these different schedules, but Schedule E is the S corporations, the rental income, your estate and trust income. And then in 2002, this is the change now that we've seen in adjusted gross income. And granted, this is not the same as like even what we saw at the beginning of last session when we had the same one for 2000. Since between 2000 and 2002, we've seen some, you know, drops in our capital gains and things. So now capital gains is comprising 3.7%. I mean, it's still growth over 1990, but as far as the percent of our total adjusted gross income, it's not at all at the height that it was in 2000. Now, wages, you can see there, it's gone up, you know, some, but not significantly from 1990 at 67% of the total. Now, what has changed are things like interest and dividends. Well, we've seen a real drop in interest rates, so obviously then our interest and dividends income has dropped to 4% versus the 8% that we saw in 1990. Businesses, this also went down slightly because it's just not growing at as fast as wages and capital gains. Pension income, you know, obviously we're aging as a population, so we're seeing our pension income grow over the last 12 years, so now it's 10% of our total adjusted gross income. And this is basically miscellaneous, again, the small businesses, rental income and things, that grew also. So it was only 3.2%, it's now 5.2%. Now, this just kind of gives you a graphical illustration of some of those major components and how they changed in adjusted gross income. Between 2000, which was really at our height before the recession, to now 2002 when we were still in a recession. So these are the things that jump out right at you is the unemployment compensation income. Now, obviously, when you're in a recession, then you have more unemployment compensation checks. So that increased 180%. Capital gains fell 58% between 2000 and 2002. You saw IRA distributions fall 12%. And again, that's because of the reductions in the stock markets. Dividends and interest reduced 28% due to the lower interest rates. Now, you see wages over that two-year period only grew 1.4%. Well, we know that inflation was growing at 2% and better each year. So, you know, we can see that wages aren't keeping up with inflation during this time period. Business income was only 0.2%. Pensions grew 4.9%. The miscellaneous, again, that's the S corporations and rental income and things that grew 6%. And alimony, well, that's always good at growing. Mm-hmm. Well, 8.6%.
Let's get that up to 10%.
Well, just maybe to wrap up, I'll just kind of show you basically with the distribution of the AGI components. In 2002, what we're seeing now is really a more diversified, higher income AGI component. And that's the main thing, is recognizing that over time, we've been seeing more of the higher income folks have a more diverse gross income base. So basically that when we're looking here, wages do not play as an important role to the 100,000 plus tax returns as it does for these lower income folks, where it's a large portion of their total adjusted gross income. And you see here, like the blue is miscellaneous. So what you're basically seeing is the small corporations and stuff, or people who are able to have rental income and things, that's really in that 100,000 plus category. That's where majority of that is seen. Same with capital gains and business income. It's mainly up there in the higher income groups. And then what you see are the averages, you know, that have really grown in the adjusted gross income. So the average grew in 2002, basically with this one, almost 200,000 versus about 175,000. So that's really what's then grown our average adjusted gross income throughout the state, and that's why that's grown so much from 24,995 to 42,736. And then these next slides basically just go through counties, and so you can just look at this and kind of, you know, at your own leisure as far as, you know, basically I'm showing you by county the average AGI and the average tax by county in 2002. And this really does illustrate now the disparity between our urban Portland area, where the highest average tax was $3,237 for Washington County versus Wheeler County at $1,270. So, you know, you've really, you know, got almost a $2,000 tax average difference there. And that's just really some of the issues then that we're seeing with urban and rural areas. And this just kind of shows up through our tax system. And this one just shows 1990, where basically there just wasn't that significant difference between average tax. And these are just the donations, and basically as people want to donate on their tax returns, then they can do that. And this just shows you the major donations: Alzheimer's research, Stop Domestic Violence, Child Abuse, and AIDS, and then the non-game wildlife. And they're all kind of evenly split. And then you've got those other donations. You've got about 17 total different organizations that you can donate to on your tax return. And that's reflected then in your other category here.
Does that list rotate on the tax?
Senator Deckard, that's correct, yes.
So we rotate all 17 through so that each year a different one's going to show up on the tax form to...
Yeah, Chairman Deckard, there's these are permanent. So there are some permanent slots, but then they'll rotate and the other, you know, there's five here that are permanent. And then there's more on the tax form itself than just five. And so then those are the ones that'll rotate.
They'll rotate on.
Yeah.
Mr. Chair.
Yes, Senator Brzezinski.
Following up on yesterday, Senator George was talking about his deduction, or not deduction, but contribution back in for those taxpayers who wanted to give more. Is that reflected in the other column, or how would that be captured if it isn't?
Senator Brzezinski, I don't remember if there was one in terms of just, you know, like other, if you could put in, specify in your own one. That's what you're... Is that correct? I didn't hear all the discussion yesterday. So.
Right. You can go on the website, Treasurer's Office, and you can actually make a donation to a school or something like that.
Yeah.
And that would be tax deductible, correct? I think that's the way that was set up.
Senator George, that's correct. Yeah, that's part of the educational charitable deductions. But as far as on the tax form, I don't think it's there.
It's not, okay.
And now it's something you could add if that was something you wanted to do. So.
Okay.
And the rest of this is just stuff that we'll go through in more detail. I mean, as far as this is just basically the part year and non-residents, and we kind of touched on it already as far as we here in Oregon, you know, we tax a full year residents, but we also tax part year residents if they live somewhere else but they're working here in Oregon. And so for that portion of time that they're here in Oregon, then they would be taxed. Here in Oregon. If they moved away, if they worked here for just 6 months and then they moved somewhere else, then they would be just taxed for the income that was earned here in Oregon. And then for non-residents, you have the absentee landlord, any rental income that you would earn here in Oregon that would then be taxed here, and you would pay Oregon taxes. And or if you were a commuter from Vancouver working in Portland, then you would be taxed for that income.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
If we can follow up on that last one, I mean, I've heard some talk about that. How broad do we go in taxing people who do live across the state besides Vancouver? I mean, is this a special tax that's set up for those who have residence in Vancouver, or do we catch other border community residents from other states?
Well, Senator Brzezinski, this is something that you're supposed to, you know that if you work here in Oregon, earn the income here, that you're supposed to be paying tax. So that means it's not just a Portland, Vancouver issue. I mean, but again, it'd probably be something to ask the Department of Revenue when we talk about tax compliance, because I think that's something that may be difficult for them to really catch how many people are really here working and are obligated to pay that tax.
So the example, that's just an example of those who do commute from across the state border to here.
Yeah.
Thank you.
But Deborah, we do track that, don't we? The companies have to report
employee wages.
Employee wages. She's not.
Well, Chairman Deckard, I'll just stop here unless, you know, y'all have further questions.
Yeah, Senator George.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Going back to page 15 and the distribution and the higher income folks, what percentage of the total amount of state taxes paid is paid by those, say, 60,000 and above? You know, you hear like at the federal level, they, you know, like pay 90% of all the taxes.
Okay.
Do we have that number?
Senator George, so you're asking, like, of these two bars here, 60,000 to 100,000 and 100,000 and above, right?
Yes.
Okay, yeah. So you've got roughly 61% of the total adjusted gross income is paid by those that are 60,000 and above.
Okay.
So 61%.
Okay, thanks.
Other questions or thoughts? Just on the reconnect issue, if, say in May, the administration's tax cuts are made permanent, the categories that I was watching as we went through the slides were dividends and interest, capital gains, obviously the inheritance issue. Barring no change in Oregon policy, what effects would that have? And I forget what page the graphs are on, but what effects would that have on our fiscal structure?
Chairman Deckard, as far as if the federal government, like, changed their federal laws to lower the tax rates, or
permanent, which is some of the discussion, at least in the short term, mm-hmm. that they're having.
So Chairman Deckard, what that means is we would have less federal tax subtraction. So as a deduction, we would have a smaller deduction. So that raises then our Oregon state taxes. The amount that we're collecting is increased because that federal income tax deduction is lowered.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how it comes through, is that connection with our deduction of the federal tax liability.
Mm-hmm.
Mr. Chair, I just want to point out, too, you mentioned the inheritance tax, which we have seen some very significant federal changes, but that's a different animal in terms of our connection issues. Both the AG and council has told us that we don't connect to those changes automatically. So those are that's an independent individual decision of the legislature.
Mm-hmm. Other questions or thoughts?
Thank very you. Informative.
Yeah, very good. Thank you very much. Appreciate it. Congratulations on Zachary. nice to have a picture. If Mazin, when he does property taxes on Thursday, can have some picture.
we'll force him to do it.
Right.
I didn't know if that was the hard sell or the soft sell.
She knows how to get to our collective hearts.
Mr. Chair, I told her I was going to include my beagle picture.
That's right. That's a hard one to work into. Revenue.
Yeah. There's no exemption there.
Anything else, Paul, that we have for today?
Mr. Chair, no. We've got the excise taxes tomorrow and the property taxes on Thursday. And we're working on the schedule for next week, and we'll start looking at some individual bills.
Great. Thanks.
Thank you.
We're adjourned.